This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, April 18th, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. The annual Champions for Kids Razor Fest is April 26th at Razorback Stadium in Fayetteville. This free family event begins at 10 a.m. and features games, autographs, live music, and giveaways. The U of A red and white football game begins at 1 p.m. More information available at championsforkids.org.
KUAF Night with the Naturals is Thursday at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. KUAF ticket holders will be seated together as the Nats host the Springfield Cardinals at 7.05 p.m. KUAF tickets are only available at 927-4063 or click the banner at KUAF.com to email an order. A portion of ticket sales will benefit your public radio station, KUAF 91.3 FM.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, how the United States government and Native American tribes are cooperating on the management of some forest lands. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently attended the annual To Bridge a Gap conference in Northwest Arkansas. And we'll hear a pair of original songs from John Dooley before he takes the stage at Springfest on Dixon Street tomorrow.
First, the countdown to the May 20th primary elections in Arkansas is down to 31 days. The general election follows just over 5 months later. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas recently sat down with some political observers to discuss what to expect as the 2014 elections grow closer. His roundtable included Alice Stewart, the host of a morning political talk show on commercial radio in Little Rock, and Michael Cook, a Democratic strategist and blogger. Scott Inman, a reporter and anchor for KATV and Roby's co-host for the program Talk Business and Politics, was also part of the conversation that began with discussion of the U.S. Senate race in Arkansas.
New polling in the U.S. Senate race this week from Talk Business and Hendricks College shows Pryor with a tiny lead over Tom Cotton. The Pryor folks obviously elated. Here's what the Cotton folks had to say. David Ray, spokesman for Tom Cotton campaign. We've always known this race would be strongly contested. Alice, you were in Washington, D.C. this past week. What is the buzz on that Senate race after this poll's come out?
Well, the buzz is I was at the Republican National Committee the other day and speaking with them. They're still extremely confident. Not overly confident, but extremely confident, given that in a race like this, when you have an incumbent senator with this kind of name ID, with this kind of legacy in the state of Arkansas, to still be in most polls, polling under 50%, that's not a good sign. And in Washington, D.C., and it's trickling down to Arkansas, people are frustrated with the Obama administration, Obamacare, the factual inaccuracies that come out of D.C., and Mark Pryor is a big part of that. And what they're seeing is that, well, your poll, great poll, still within the margin of error,
right.
But if you look at the average of all the polls we have in this race, Tom Cotton is ahead 1.5%, the Real Clear Politics average, and that is not a good sign for Senator Pryor. He should be dominating.
What are you seeing in the buzz?
Well, a couple things that come to mind. First of all, the Republicans, the Koch brothers and others have thrown about $6 million in negative TV ads against Mark Pryor, and yet the polling shows he's ahead. The Talk Business poll came out that showed he was ahead. Another poll that came out also showed that Mark Pryor's ahead. I think it shows two things. I think number one, the Republican message is just not working in Arkansas. I mean, and this is a state where President Obama has a 65% disapproval rating, but the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate can't even hit 45%. To me, that just shows he's a very weak candidate. I think Arkansans are coming to see that his politics are just too extreme, and Mark Pryor, you know, somebody we've known and respected and liked for many, many years, which is why he's leading in all the polls.
And I think one thing is, quickly, it's important to note the ads that have come out by various groups, they're just to shine a spotlight on Senator Pryor's record. If you want to call them negative ads, then you're saying that his record is negative. But they're just spotlighting
his
record.
Negative ads, however you want to do it. But the bottom line is they've spent $6 million against Mark Pryor, and they haven't budged an inch for Tom Cotton. This shouldn't be this way. This is a southern state where the President Obama is incredibly unpopular, and yet their nominee for the U.S. Senate is barely holding on. To me, that just shows he's just not making it. He's an incredibly overrated candidate.
One of the big numbers that jumped out at me in the polling this week was the undecided number. I thought it was kind of low,
8%.
So obviously, if this thing is a dead heat, there's not many ways it's going to swing one way or the other. And I'm so glad I thought of this question because you guys have spent a lot of time just now talking about the other guy.
Right.
I want you to tell me, how does Representative Cotton get those undecideds? And then your turn will be, how does Senator Pryor get those undecideds?
Sure.
And do it without mentioning the other guy.
Well, the key is, appealing to the undecided. It's generally the way it works. You're always going to have your solid base and their solid base, and you want to get the mushy middle is what candidates want to appeal to. And the key is for Congressman Cotton is to continue to do what he's doing, shining the spotlight on his good, solid conservative record, but also focusing on the fact that Senator Pryor voted for Obamacare. He's voted with Barack Obama 95% of the time. And not only that, he still thinks Obamacare is a good thing and said just the other day he would vote for it again. And we need to shine the spotlight on that. America does not like Obamacare. They don't like the overreach of the federal government. And Arkansas feels the same way.
You violated Scott's premise.
Yeah, Senator Pryor.
It's all right.
Well, I think for Senator Pryor, he has to continue emphasizing what he has been, that he's an independent voice for Arkansas, that he's always going to do what he believes is right for the people of the state. He has a strong record of fighting for everything from our seniors to their college students to the middle class. And I think if he keeps hitting points, those points home, that he's his own person. He's an Arkansas Democrat, not a national Democrat. I think he will continue to lead in the polls.
So are you saying then the message is not totally getting out yet? I mean, if you're saying he continue the same message, is there anything, if you're running that campaign, is there anything you drive home that he's not doing now?
No, I think he keeps doing what he's doing. I mean, look, he's leading. In a race, he should not be leading. You look at other Southern Democratic senators, the few that are left, they're behind. But yet, Senator Pryor is holding on, I think, because it's his own positive message, plus the extremism of Tom Cotton, the way he votes, that just, you know, this is the guy who voted against the Violence Against Women Act, the only Arkansas congressman to do that. How do you justify that to women voters?
Important thing, to stick with the facts. That was a duplication of services, and that was not an anti-woman bill.
A Republican congressman in Arkansas to vote against
it. Well, if you look at the facts of that, that's not against women. That is to cut down the duplication of funds.
So the other three congressmen are wrong?
It's to cut down the duplication of funds.
So the other three congressmen were wrong.
The point is, sticking with the facts here, and you wanted to make the point of Senator Pryor's record in the state of Arkansas, he's not ahead in the polls. He's ahead in one poll. That's a snap, one poll.
There's two polls that came out this week.
Or the other one is...
By opinion research, a very well-respected Arkansas-based polling firm that had him ahead, granted 10 points up, probably a little bit larger, but there's two polls that came out this week that shows Pryor is winning.
That poll right there, the opinion research poll, it overpolled Democrats by 12%, and that's a fact. And the fact is that they are 10 points ahead. This is the same polling firm that had Congressman Griffin ahead by 2 points right before his reelection, and he won by 16 points. So it's a Democrat skewed poll. But keep in mind, all these polls are fantastic. They're snapshots in time. Poll is good. But you have to look at the overall trend. You look at the average, and the average of the polls show that Congressman Cotton is ahead by 1.5% against an incumbent Democrat that should be far, far ahead. So the fact is, Congressman Cotton's ahead right now, and he's outpacing him in fundraising as well.
Okay, so we got 30 seconds left, so very quickly here. Alice first, then Michael. Safe to say 2014 is not setting up like 2010. It's not a Republican tidal wave year, is it?
It could still be, and who's to say that it's not going to be, given the way that things are going in Washington, D.C.? I expect it to be. I expect to see Congressman Cotton win. I expect to see a sweep in the constitutional offices. I see it to set up just like we did in 2010.
She says it's a tidal wave.
It's not. You know, you look back 4 years ago this time, Senator Blanche Lincoln was behind in every poll, and yet two polls that came out this week show Senator Pryor listening.
Roby Brock and Scott Inman, co-hosts of the KATV program Talk Business and Politics, talked with Michael Cook, the blogger behind Cook's Outlook and a Democratic strategist, and they also talked to Alice Stewart, the host of The Alice Stewart Show on commercial radio in Little Rock. Roby Brock is with our content partner, Talk Business and Politics. Support for Talk Business on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, encouraging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. More information at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
In about 15 minutes on this edition of Ozarks at Large, before the final curtain falls on Theater Square's 8th season, we already have several reasons to look forward to the 9th season from the company.
When we asked ourselves, what do we really want to do around the time of the holidays? The answer was in part, well, first of all, something challenging for us, a little challenging for our audience in some ways, just to keep up with this kind of adventure, but also something that you can bring your whole family to, and this is that play.
T2's directors reveal the 9th season ahead on Ozarks at Large.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. On this Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, I'll feature music from some great pianists, including Bruce Barth, Kenny Barron, Tommy Flanagan, Cyrus Chestnut, and Herbie Hancock, to name a few. We'll also hear from Christian McBride and guitarist Herb Ellis, saxophonist Jevon Jackson, and much more. That's the Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, right here on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. USDA Forest Service officials recently gathered with tribal foresters and scientists for an annual three-day conference in Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich met with several indigenous participants to bring us this story.
The USDA Forest Service is charged with managing national forest system resources. But 20 years ago, the Forest Service began to establish relations with Native American tribes, developing a strategic planning framework for USDA Forest Service initiatives that acknowledge First Nation sovereignty and protect Native American rights and interests. Tribes and foresters have collaborated on complex policy issues regarding timber and water resources, conservation, as well as energy and mineral development. But this unique tribal relations program also aims to incorporate indigenous worldviews and practices. For more than a dozen years, stakeholders have also gathered for the annual To Bridge a Gap conference. Last year, it was hosted by the Delaware Nation in Norman, Oklahoma. This year, officials with the Ouachita Ozark St. Francis National Forest staged a conference in Fayetteville at the town center with dozens of research scientists and forest agents.
My name is Sarah Hoagland, and I'm a tribal member. I'm from the Pueblo of Laguna. There's really a benefit to bridging this gap. There's a huge benefit of having tribal leaders, tribal elders, natural resource managers from tribes come together with the U.S. Forest Service and other federal agencies and just having informal discussions and talking about the issues.
Sarah Hoagland is a USDA Forest Service research biologist based in Flagstaff. She said along with national forests, the U.S. also has Indian forests.
18 million acres of Indian forests. And yes, that's forests on reservations. And that's a significant amount of land. That's almost 3% of the, you know, contiguous 48 states. And then on top of that, the Forest Service has, you know, I think 6 to 7% of the land base. So combined, that's almost 10% of the land. So if we're talking also big picture, if we can, you know, work with those two and broaden our goals, you know, that's really going to help with, you know, sustaining our environment into the future.
Hoagland says fire suppression and timber practices on forest lands have created dangerous fire conditions in some places where native foresters historically have used best management practices.
Yeah, that's exactly what we've seen, is that tribes have been using fire, you know, until before current times. They've been using it forever, essentially. And we're seeing now that as they continue those practices, they've basically become models of how the landscape should look. And so their active prescribed burns are really beneficial for the environment, and we're learning from that.
Mike Dockery, a member of the Potawatomi Nation, works for the Northern Research Station of the U.S. Forest Service. He spoke about traditional sustainable forestry practices of the Menominee Nation in northeastern Wisconsin.
And that story is essentially that sustainable forestry started in the United States, in Wisconsin, on the Menominee Indian Reservation. I laid out a vision that one of their chiefs had. There's oral history that talks about how to manage the forest sustainably. And this is a chief from the treaty era, Chief Oshkosh. So in the mid sort of 1850s, when they were signing their last treaties with the government, Chief Oshkosh was essentially saying, we can start at one end of the reservation and harvest the trees that are mature, the ones that are sick, the ones that are dying, and we can go to the end of the reservation, turn around essentially, and come back, and we can do that forever. The Menominee then have been very politically astute, and they formed partnerships. So they worked with their federal partners to get several laws passed. The first one is the first law that codifies a limit on timber harvesting in the United States. In 1890, they had a law that limited timber harvest in the United States on the reservation. So it said they could only cut a certain amount of timber, and the Menominee pushed for that. Previously, they could only cut dead and downed timber. The Menominee thought, oh, this is great because we can do this forever. We can implement Chief Oshkosh's vision with this law. Trees for timber to sell, you know, going through the sawmill. They've cut it not just once or twice, but in many places five or six different times. They continually go in and harvest. It's one of the heaviest managed forests in the United States. And again, they've got more today than when they started, and it's of higher quality.
First Nations don't live off the landscape, Dockery says. They're members of it.
There's really not a separation between people and the trees. So the term sort of virgin forest doesn't really make a lot of sense because we're part of the forest, we're part of the trees. I truly believe, and you can look at the record with fire and other things, that human beings made these forests the way they are. You can even see this in the tropics. The Amazon rainforest is not a virgin forest. It's a garden.
This conference was staged on the Ozarks Plateau, and participants learned that the Ozark St. Francis National Forest, which covers more than 1 million acres, is one of the most diverse forests in the nation. And the Ozarks Plateau was Osage territory.
My name is Everett Waller. I'm from the Hominy Indian Village on the Osage Reservation in Hominy, Oklahoma. Wajaji, which is the Osage people, are broken down into three districts in Oklahoma, Wakakoli, Zonzoli, and Pozoli. And those are actual names from Missouri over forest, upland forest people, thorny thicket people, mound areas that don't have trees.
The Osage, among most tribes, were either coerced by treaty or forcibly dislocated from historic homelands, in this case, Missouri and Arkansas, under the Indian Removal Act of 1830. And their ancient territory was vast, Everett Waller says.
Approximately 900 million acres from the Ohio Valley down to Colorado to the outskirts of Texas. That was our hunting trails and our war trails.
At the conference, Everett Waller talked about preserving and restoring sacred Osage burial sites on forest lands under NAGPRA, Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, and NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. He cited one expedition where he reburied the remains of an Osage girl.
This is our family here. I cannot teach my children anything about just the love of who they are, what their people are. But up here, you can actually show them. And I think that is necessary. And also, rangers change hands, people change hands, but they allowed me to go to the White River last year and put a girl back where it had come out of the riverbank. And all this time, I've been doing the repatriation for the nation for the last 15 years. I do the ceremonies at home. I do the funeral ceremonies and the healing ceremonies. I'm only a vessel. It's just what I've been taught by my people to help each other. I want them to know that there's something still here because those people would need to come back home. that repatriation is so close to my heart because I don't feel like I'm holding a box of someone I don't know. I feel just the opposite, that this is my great-great-grandfather. This is my great-great-grandmother. And that maybe in the next world, I'll meet them. And maybe they can tell me then I'm okay.
Osage Cultural Liaison Everett Waller says ultimately, there's no such thing as a forest preserve because all of the United States is sacred tribal territory. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And if you'd like to hear an extended version of Everett Waller's interview of his people's history, you can go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com. It is Friday, April 18th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grahaden.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Do you remember that little list of people to watch in 2014?
That was in What's Up?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
I think somebody here was on it.
Wasn't me.
No, I think that guy was on it.
Yeah.
And what have I done so far? It's been a big disappointment. Sorry, folks who've been watching.
But if you remember that list, Janet Alexander was on it, too.
Yes.
She's a Eureka Springs actor, director, artist, entrepreneur, and she is having her first solo show this weekend at Caribe in Eureka Springs. She is about 9 months into the jewelry she's making, which is worked metal that is then powder coated.
Okay.
Powder coating is something new for art. It's been industrially used for a long time.
Does it make stuff? Does it make your work shiny?
It's like enameling it.
Okay. Okay.
Only she says it's a lot easier to work with and a lot more creative. She's also a Kickstarter success because she did a Kickstarter campaign to get the money to get the supplies she needed to have the powder coating available to her in her home. Thus, entrepreneur.
Oh.
So. Her stuff is beautiful. I want all of it. Oh, wait, there's no surprise in that. There's a reception tonight at 6. The show is open 10 to 8 tomorrow and noon to 5 on Sunday. It's KJ's Caribe Restaurant and Cantina, which is becoming quite an arts venue up there.
Arts and music, yep.
309 West Van Buren Street. Admission is free, and you can find out more about Janet at Facebook Eureka Janet. Also tonight, there is a performance and installation by Quentin Rivera Toro at Bottle Rocket Gallery in Fayetteville. Art about the place he's in, and it should be really interesting. Hamlet is on stage at Theater Squared, 7:30 today, 2 and 7:30 tomorrow, and 2 and 7 on Sunday at Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville.
Have you made it yet?
I have not.
Have you,
Kyle?
I have not.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah, Hamlet was...
It'd be fun to go see it, and then As You Like It is on stage at the university. We'll talk about that on Sunday.
So plenty of Shakespeare.
And then the Improv Shakespeare Company is going to be in town on Wednesday.
So lots of Shakespeare.
Lots of Shakespeare. Tomorrow is Springfest in Fayetteville.
Bed races and all of that.
It'll snow.
No, this year...
Oh, please, for the love, no.
No, this year I think we're good.
Okay, Springfest is now, what, 20 years old?
No, this is the 31st year.
Okay. Yeah.
They skipped a year, but this is the 31st
okay.
one.
And right. every year the weather's been exciting.
Yes.
That's a good word for it.
Yes. So let's go with not. Let's start a new tradition. There's a pancake breakfast at Jose's at 7, from which you can dive right into the 5K run at 8.
No.
Yeah, I'd say pick one or the
can
other.
Can I not? Will the pancake breakfast still be going on when I'm done running?
I think so.
So I think, yeah. That's the way I would do that in high school. You run and then you go to the pancake breakfast.
Because then you're ready.
You're hungry.
Yeah. I'm thinking about trying to walk it.
I like it.
They can't chip me to time it because nobody wants to wait around for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But
walk it anyway.
10:30 is the dog parade. 11 o'clock, there's an Easter egg hunt at the Walton Art Center Rose Garden. 1 o'clock is the... eternally popular bed races. Mm-hmm. There's something called a carpool at 3:45.
Do you pull the car?
I don't know.
Is this like the world's strongest man competition?
I don't know. Where you
pull the fire truck?
Well, what's a tractor pull? Is it like
a tractor pull is two tractors pulling at each other.
So is this maybe
I think this
that?
Is probably like the world's strongest man to see if you can pull a car.
I mean, I'd be okay. I mean, that's impressive, but I'd still be okay with two cars trying to pull each other.
Well, at 3:45 tomorrow, we'll find out.
Okay.
And at 6 o'clock is the pub crawl, and we all know how to do that.
Yeah.
So we got that. Tomorrow is also the Family History Fair, which is at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Springdale.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Starts at 8 o'clock in the morning.
But no carpool there.
No carpool there.
Okay.
You can pull volumes of things.
Yeah.
How's that? The Battle of Fayetteville commemoration is tomorrow. That starts at 10 o'clock at Headquarters House in Fayetteville. Has all sorts of things. A lecture on women in the Civil War, a Civil War medicine program, music by the Holmes Brigade musicians, Grandma Stories of Cane Hill College with Linda Doty, and the Battle of Fayetteville is described by Ian Beard in the person of Colonel Marcus LaRue Harrison.
Right.
If you don't know about the Battle of Fayetteville, get the over there to Headquarters House. There's a program called The Life and Times of Mary O'Toole Parker. At 10 and noon tomorrow at the Fort Smith National Historic Site. She is the hanging judge's wife, played by Sue Robeson. There's an artist talk with Kat Robinson, who is author of Classic Eateries of the Ozarks and the Arkansas River Valley, at 2 at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale. And a walk on the wild side. That's before the pub crawl. An edible trees and plants workshop from 2 to 4 at Devil's Den.
Wow. You can tell it's spring.
It certainly is. Good luck.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blues Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday, and we're playing second tracks. Yes, we're playing the second track of every CD I bring in. We'll be playing selections by Mike Zito, Damon Fowler, Samantha Fish, the Holmes Brothers, Guitar Mikey, and more. And again, that's the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large. Hamlet is on stage right now in Fayetteville, the last production of this season for Theater Squared. But even before this season is over, the theater company has unveiled its lineup for next year, its ninth season. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis was at the announcement, and he has this roundup of what to expect from Theater Squared in the next year.
While Theater Squared is ending its eighth season with a classic drama, season 9 will open at the end of August with a comedy. One Man, Two Governors is an adaptation by Richard Bean of the Italian Commedia dell'arte, A Servant and Two Masters. Robert Ford, T2's artistic director, says that One Man, Two Governors is even funnier than Noises Off, a comedy presented in Theater Squared's seventh season.
It does everything that we want a comedy to do, not just make you laugh, but it touches your heart, it touches your brain because it is so brilliantly put together and it combines music and an amazing amount of physical comedy with just out-and-out farce.
Following the comedy, Theater Squared will then present David Auburn's Proof, a play centered around a young mathematician whose famous mathematician father has lost his mind. Amy Herzberg, T2 Associate Artistic Director, says the play has a lot of heart, humor, and mystery, even if it does deal with some heavy ideas.
One of the big things that this play talks about is if you, a mathematician, somebody who loves proof, hard, cold evidence of what you can see and understand and think about, has to deal with and face up to all the things that you never get proof of. Things like, will I ever truly be mad or not? Will this same thing happen to me? Will I fall ill? Will I find love? What is love? How can you prove that love exists? And these are the kinds of questions that I think apply in some ways are universally understandable.
Then in December, Around the World in 80 Days will be on stage at Nadine Baum Studios. Martin Miller, T2 Executive Director, says there were a few simple reasons for choosing the Jules Verne classic.
When we asked ourselves, what do we really want to do around the time of the holidays? The answer was in part, first of all, something challenging for us, a little challenging for our audience in some ways, just to keep up with this kind of adventure. But also something that you can bring your whole family to, and this is that play.
Then when January comes to a close, Theater Squared will present the world premiere of a new work by Robert Ford, titled Look Away. Ford says he developed the play based on an oral history of a near lynching that happened in 1930s Wilson, Arkansas.
So this is a story about a couple of guys who are caught with a couple of white girls, a couple of African-American teenagers, caught with a couple of white girls. Before they get caught by this mob, they run to the big house, the boss man's house, Roy Wilson's home, because one of the guys' mother is the head housekeeper. And this guy says, if I can just tell Mr. Wilson what really happened, we'll be okay. And so we follow that night in the kitchen, and we get to see what Mr. Wilson says the next morning.
And rounding out Theater Squared's ninth season will be a play by Tracy Letts titled Superior Donuts. Actor and director Sean Patrick Riley, who is in town to direct Theater Squared's production of Hamlet, acted in the Broadway production of Superior Donuts. He says that the play explores ideas of friendship, loyalty, and honesty, and the costs associated with those values.
The play follows Arthur, who is a former 60s radical, who has ensconced himself in a donut shop in Upton in Chicago, and he encounters and hires an incredibly energetic, troubled, young African-American writer. And it's a play about what does gentrification mean? What does the change in any neighborhood mean? What is the cost? And ultimately, where do we come together?
After Superior Donuts, T2 will have another Arkansas New Playfest, which is still forthcoming in the current season. For more information about Theater Squared's ninth season, visit theater2.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
The Beaver Watershed Alliance is now accepting submissions for the 2014 annual Watershed Photography Contest. Images should focus on nature found throughout the Beaver Lake watershed. Prizes will be awarded to the top three winning photographs. Submission deadline is May 31st and can be made on Facebook or at beaverwatershedalliance.org. Beaver Watershed Alliance, our environment, our health, our home.
Walton Arts Center presents the improvised Shakespeare Company April 23rd as part of the 10x10 Art Series. This company uses audience suggestions to improvise an entire play using the language and theme of Shakespeare's Elizabethan works. Tickets and information available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600.
In just a few moments on Ozarks, Antoinette talks to John Dooley about his music, his appearance tomorrow at Springfest in Fayetteville, and his forthcoming EP.
And it's more than just Springfest happening tomorrow. Robots will be at Ramey Junior High in Fayetteville. The school will host a VEX robotics competition tomorrow beginning at 9:45 a.m. This is the first VEX competition to be held in Northwest Arkansas and will include competitors from several area school districts, including Bryant, Fort Smith, and Star City, Arkansas, Belton, Missouri, and Muskogee, Oklahoma. There will be both junior and senior high teams.
Also tomorrow, and about as far away from robots as you can get, Mother Nature and her animal friends will be at Hobbs State Park near Rogers. The event is called The Forest Comes to Life and will be from 1 until 4 tomorrow afternoon along the paved Ozark Plateau Trail. The event is free, but donations of non-perishable food items for Good Samaritan House will be collected. For more information, 789-5000.
Remember the mammoth at the Museum of Native American History we told you about a couple of weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
The official dedication of the real fossil found in Siberia will be Wednesday morning at 11. The woolly mammoth weighs a ton and stands over 12 feet tall. Museum founder and director David Bogle will handle the ceremonial unveiling. The museum is located at 202 Southwest O Street in Bentonville, and the admission every day is free.
Slade Cleaves has been an ice cream truck driver, a meter reader, a pizza delivery guy, a paid subject in pharmaceutical drug studies, a groundskeeper, a film developer, and a rope tow operator. If you think he might have some stories to tell, you're correct. He's been writing songs for a while now and performing them since 1985. He's coming back to Northwest Arkansas Saturday, May 3rd at 324 Ballroom in downtown Fayetteville. Admission for the concert, $20. Reservations can be made by email. The address is mshirky@sbcglobal.net. The ballroom, if you're unfamiliar, is located behind Jose's on Dixon Street.
The Rogers School District will honor three distinguished alumni and one U.S. Senator Thursday night at Embassy Suites. The alumni honorees include Mary Lynn Reese, Jan Buck, and Bob Ross, a retired teacher from the district. The U.S. Senator is John Bozeman. Tickets for the celebration cost $100, and proceeds will be directed toward the Rogers Public Education Foundation. Each of the honorees will have his or her name placed on the walls of distinction located on the campuses of Rogers' two high schools. For tickets or more information, 636-7633.
Next time on Ask Me Another, songstress Nellie Mackay lends her voice to a musical round, a slight tweaking of a Paul Simon classic.
Hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the keys, Siri, and get yourself free.
Join me, Ophira Eisenberg, for NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia. Game on.
Ask Me Another tomorrow morning at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. After taking a year off, Springfest returned to Fayetteville last year to celebrate its 30th anniversary. Inclement weather caused the festival to be postponed until summer. However, the organizers must have thought the event went well because Springfest is returning to Dixon Street tomorrow. The 31st installment of Springfest will include a pancake breakfast, 5K run, dog parade, bed races, and live music. John Dooley is one of the musicians who will perform on the Jose stage tomorrow. Dooley, who is originally from Greenwood, moved to Rogers about 2 years ago to take a job at Oakley Chapel United Methodist Church. Earlier this month, John stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio. During our conversation, he says he gained an interest in music while attending church as a kid.
My dad was in a men's quartet. Love listening to like old, you know, those old gospel songs, just him singing. And Sister Anita played guitar, and so I used to sing, and I wanted to play guitar, and she would teach me kind of like some chords, and then we'd play like those old gospel songs. So I got that. Also, that was in the 90s, so I was like really big into like all the acoustic stuff, like Counting Crows, Dave Matthews Band, Sister Hazel, all those cool bands. They were just, I just like love listening to them, you know. So it's like, oh, it's just a perfect fit. So,
well, when did you first learn to sing or play guitar?
I guess I was like 15 or 16 when I started playing it, you know. Didn't really play out much, just played at like church. And then I was like 17. Some people at like a local restaurant down in Fort Smith asked me to come play and jam, so I did that. And the rest is kind of just history, I guess.
So why did you continue to play? What did you sort of fall in love with, you know, playing for people?
Well, I mean, it was just like the relationship with people, you know, you play a song and they just like connect to a song that you both like, that you play, obviously a cover tune. Obviously no one's ever connected to one of my songs yet, which hopefully that'll be sooner than later. But it's just kind of like that connection that you have, that just people are like, man, I used to listen to the song when I was a kid. And so that relationship, I think, just kind of builds it more, because I see people like opening up more. Does that make sense? Like, so you play guitar and you just love on people, you know. It's really fun, because it's like, it's something that you would do, you know, for free and just for enjoyment, and yet you get to bless people too, like just by playing and singing. So it's like kind of an addiction, I guess, you know. Like, it's like, oh, I really totally want to like connect with these people, and they totally want to connect with me. So it's like, oh, that just makes it more fun.
And you worked in a music store for a while, and you actually fixed guitars?
Yeah, worked at Music Box. I kind of like fell in love with it. I mean, obviously it's kind of expensive to have somebody else work on your guitar these days, so sure. I'm kind of glad that I have that background. I don't know a lot, but I know a little bit to get me by. But I love treating people's instrument like I would treat my own. And so just kind of like cleaning it up and making it look good, making it, put new strings on it, because then it's like, it's got greater potential to sound better, to write that awesome song. So.
And how did you learn to fix a guitar? I mean, I don't think I even really know how to restring my guitar, let alone fix someone's guitar.
I started watching Steve Bynum, one of my good friends that started doing it, and he kind of showed me here or there. I mean, his Bynum School of Teaching was so cheap because he would charge me like three tacos, and like back when I was like 15 or 16, tacos were like 69 cents at Taco Bell.
Yes.
So like I could go buy him three or four tacos and he would be happy, and then he would just sit there and like kind of teach me on this and that. And then sometimes it's always good to learn, you know, you learn from your mistakes. So like, I mean, I've broken a couple of guitars too. I had to replace them, but
sure.
It's okay. They were cheap enough to where I could you know fix yeah. them or buy a new one without costing me a lot of money. So.
I'm sure they don't let novices in fixing guitars touch the really expensive ones.
Yeah,
I'm sure they know that going in. Did you learn anything else while you were working at a music store?
I learned that I guess people, tend to like. You want to, if you're a salesman, you're just a salesman. But if you actually care about the person and you want to work with them to get them like the best deal and stuff, they tend to come back and you build a relationship. There's a lot of people that have my like personal cell phone number to call them, you know, if something was wrong or something like that. So it's like, actually care about the person, not just, oh, I care about getting your money. Also learned that like the business side of music stuff is really interesting. Sometimes it's cutthroat, and then sometimes you meet people along the way that like want to help you and you want to help them, and so you kind of like build those stepping blocks to get to where you want to go. But I love being around people. That's my passion. So,
and you have your guitar here, but you know how to play quite a number of instruments.
I play the mandolin and the bass, and I mean just pick around different things. I played the tuba when I was in junior high and high school. And the baritone. I love classical music. I love listening to trumpets and saxophones. Play with Michael Hanna, who's in like my little band, if you want to call it the John Dooley Experience band. Michael comes and sits in and plays saxophone. I love just hanging. I mean, it's just so good to just have a different variety of instruments that you just kind of love, and it's kind of soothing.
Well, you did. We've been talking about your guitar, and you brought your guitar. Would you mind playing a song for us?
Yeah, sure. This one's going to be. This is on my EP.
Okay.
It was written by Barrett Baber and myself, and it's called Burning Out. And obviously, if you know Barrett, he is. Won a couple of awards around here, and he's really cool. And this was before he got famous, so you can't accuse me of like, oh, you wrote a song with somebody who's famous. Like this was before you got semi-famous, or what do you want to call it? So we wrote a song, and it's called Burning Out. So I'd like to play it for you.
Okay.
Another night, another song, another dream, another town. Looking up with an eye on falling down. Dead speed ahead, perfect song in tow. Like an aircraft flame, I'm just trying to write the room alone. Well, I feel like I'm close, getting mine, putting polish on a rock, trying to make it. I hope that burning bright ain't burning out. I hope that burning bright ain't burning out. Every line working hard, turn the rhymes to rich. Red wine, callous hearts, and jealous fingers. Hope floats on a river of almost chance. Just a two-step song, the working life's can'ts and can'ts. Well, I feel like I'm close to getting mine. Polish on a rock, trying to make it shine. Think I have it all figured out. So I hope that burning bright ain't burning out. Hope that burning bright ain't burning out. Turn it up, turn it off, and turn it down. Look up, life's gone before you turn around. How long can I shine without burning out? And I don't want to burn out. Well, I feel like I'm close, getting mine. Putting polish on a rock, trying to make it shine. Think I have it all figured out. So I hope that burning bright ain't burning out. Hope that burning bright ain't burning out. I don't want to burn out. I don't want to burn out.
Thank you. And as you mentioned, that's on your forthcoming EP that you've been working on. Just recorded it recently.
Just got done like this past Wednesday. I'm super excited. This songs that I've had, songs that I wrote with Barrett, just a good song. Another song I wrote with Chris Purefoy. Good tunes. I think I'm hoping they're. I'm excited because it's like my first, so I'm kind of nervous. But I mean, I've worked hard to save up the money to record and save up the money to get all the all the stuff. You know, you pay a ton of money for iTunes and your personal CD and the sleeve that it goes in. So,
how long have you been working on this project?
Been about a year, about a year, maybe a little over a year. Just kind of saving up, not getting prices from different people of, hey, how much would it cost to record, and what do I need, and all that stuff. So over a year, and just been writing songs just here and there, just kind of like, oh, this will be good. That song Burning Out with me and Barrett, just like we wrote that in like 2 hours, just kind of clicked, and kind of like I filled in the blanks and just it was like easy. It was so easy.
Do you typically write songs with other folks, or do you write with yourself a lot, or?
I do. I have three out of the five songs are just me. Uh-huh. And then me and Chris wrote one, and me and Barrett wrote one. And it's just kind of like, I like writing with other people just to like get a different view of like, hey, what's another word for this? Or like, I'm trying to explain this, so can you do this? It's so fun to learn to, I guess, bounce things off one another. So it's like, oh, what about this? What about this? Okay, we're gonna go here. What about this chord? And so, I enjoy, like I said, I enjoy relationships. So, writing songs, playing music, just kind of whatever. I just really, really enjoy that.
I know you originally you're from the River Valley area, and you've moved up here 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about what musically that's been like for you? You got asked to play at a restaurant in Fort Smith, and then I assume you sort of did that scene for a while.
Yeah, I tell you this, it's crazy. Like, I move up here, kind of want to do my own music thing, like kind of like get out, see a lot of places to play. Rock and roll, just happened to have fate that 3 months after we moved up here, I had a heart attack. So, kind of like brought that to like whole like this mind perspective of like, you know, if I'm gonna go out, I'm gonna go out doing what I like doing. And so I did that. I got booked a couple of places, and it just snowballed effect. Like, it was crazy. And like, then you had places that I've been begging to get into down in Fort Smith and Greenwood calling me up wanting me to play, and it's like, really? Like, I've been begging you guys since I was like, I lived there for 29 years, and now all of a sudden you want to book me, you can make me drive back home to play, which is fine, because I feel so honored and privileged to do that. But it just snowballed effect. I mean, I don't mind playing cover tunes, like, especially if you let me play the cover tunes that I want to play.
Sure.
But I also want to write my own music, and Benton County and Washington County, these people, when you think of North Ozarks, people add the River Valley, which I don't, because I think it's like total different. It's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So you got these people here, and they're so just responsive, and like, hey, that sounded great. Like, that was one of your songs. Like, I love that cover tune, but that was a great song that you wrote. And I was like, it's really awesome just to feel that someone says, hey, that was a good song that you wrote, you know, or great, that you sound good. I mean, it's just like, wow. It feels really awesome. And there's a ton of more places to play up here than there is down in Fort Smith. So,
well, do you want to play one more song for us?
Yeah, sure can. This is another song on my EP, and it's called Let Me Go, and Hope you guys like it. So.
Finding you, it was a fun. Staring at this wall. In 3 days I had moved it all. Was that our last kiss? And they say that ignorance is bliss. What's inside of me? Feelings with no sound. And all I had to do was turn hand, I'm only losing ground. Still nowhere to be found. Finding you, it was a fun.
That was John Dooley inside the Firm and Garner Performance Studio earlier this month. He will be performing a solo acoustic set at 12:50 tomorrow during Springfest on Jose Street's side stage. He also expects his forthcoming EP to be available by late May. To keep up with the EP's progress and to learn more about John's music, you can search for John Dooley, that's J-O-N-D-O-O-L-Y, on Facebook.
Rufus Wainwright of the famous Wainwright-McGarrigle family is known for his rich tenor, but it's not always been that way.
I had the classic gorgeous soprano as a very young boy, and then I hit puberty and it all came crashing down pretty hard.
Rufus Wainwright sings sweetly and emotionally this Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
The baffled king composed.
Weekend Edition Saturday, tomorrow morning at 7 on KUAF. Theater Squared Season 8 concludes with Hamlet, on stage now through May 4th at Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studios. Shakespeare's epic tragedy is equal parts ghost story, political intrigue, doomed romance, and murder mystery. Tickets and information for Hamlet available at theater2.org or 443-5600.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. And Christina Thomas and I will be here Sunday morning, Easter Sunday morning at 9 with Weekend Ozarks at Large. Then Antoinette, you're back at noon on Monday.
I am.
All right. Have a very pleasant weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.